Good morning, and thank you for joining me on the Path to Liberty. I'm Michael Bolden with the 10th Amendment Center, and this is the show for Wednesday, December 21st, 2022. And first of all, because I'm not going to have another show between now and then, a very Merry Christmas to all of you. Thank you so much for spending some of your time with me here today. And for this episode, if we really want to get on the path to liberty, I think we first really need to understand what makes for a free people. So today, I've got a lot of great insight from the founders and old revolutionaries. First, highlighting a few of the primary ways that liberty gets attacked, and I think there's a common thread. It's almost always with the support or directly from government. But then, more importantly, answering the essential question of who are a free people? And that's the exact question that the penman of the Revolution, John Dickinson, asked in 1767. I can tell you a quick hint. It's definitely not people. A free people aren't those who happen to be living under a government who happens to be respecting their rights. That's not a state of freedom to the founders and old revolutionaries. But I'll get to more of that in just a moment. But first of all, a quick hello again and a huge thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Whether this is your first episode or you've been here for every single one since day one, I can't thank you enough. And while we allow people another moment or so to join us and get notifications to join us on the live stream platforms, we're also streaming, I think, well, we'll find out if I did it, set it up right, for the first time over on Rumble. But we live stream on YouTube and Twitter and Twitch and Odyssey.com and Facebook and now hopefully Rumble as well. And it takes some time to get notifications. So while we're waiting for everyone to join in, hi to Cheriton Farmer in Missouri, Dixie Strong in Alabama, Haji 1954, Southeast Michigan, Tyler B., Poet Fisherman in Iowa, White Bearded Gnu, says hi-de-ho, neighbors, awesome. Jonathan Shellman, Dave Simmons, Sharon Patriot, Melissa Harrell, Clay Kent, Bonehead, and Missouri Liberty Report. I appreciate you all being here. I know I skipped over. There's Jerry Jackson there in Wyoming as well. Thank you all for being here. Let's get right to this. And I should mention that if you want to follow along, I'm citing a ton of original source documents to quote founders and old revolutionaries. And if you want to read what they're having to say in context so you can learn more on your own time, over at 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty, which we've been doing episodes now for over 4.5 years, I publish a blog post for each individual episode about 1 to 2 hours after the live stream is done. And in that blog post, you're going to find all the platforms we're on, both video and audio only podcast edition. But there's a show link section where you can say, oh, okay, hey, dude, you mentioned this quote from James Otis Jr. Where do I find that? Well, I will absolutely have it linked there so you can use it in your own work, your own research, or if you just want to read a little bit more. Anyways, here, seeing we're talking about James Otis Jr., here from a section, a chapter called Of the Natural Rights of the Colonists back in 1764. He said, the colonists are by the law of nature freeborn, as indeed all men are, white or black. So if everyone, just by being human, is born free, well, something gets in the way almost all the time, and almost all the time, that's government. And as I mentioned right in the outset, I want to go through some of the many ways that freedom is attacked. We can all, I think we all have maybe a top five. I did an episode on that recently that I will mention in a few minutes and link to in the show notes at 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty. But here are some of the main ways that freedom is attacked according to the founders. Benjamin Franklin, very young Benjamin Franklin in 1722, as the substitute publisher for the New England Courant for a short time, he ran this article that said, whoever would overthrow the liberty of a nation must begin by subduing the freeness of speech. So step one to a young Benjamin Franklin, and he held the same type of view throughout the years, that you start by subduing the freeness of speech. Here's Samuel Adams in The Rights of the Colonists, 1772. What liberty can there be where property is taken away without consent? So one of the ways that they attack liberty is by stealing your stuff through taxation, through regulations, property taxes, well, just pure theft. You can't have any if they can just take it away from you. That's not a state of freedom. Richard Henry Lee, in a letter to Patrick Henry in 1778, suggested that, well, there's times in history where the loss of your liberty really has to do with the economic system, with the currency. And that's what he said. The loss of our liberty seems at present more likely to be derived from the state of our currency than from all other causes. That's Richard Henry Lee to Patrick Henry. Or Brutus, and this I think is very topical for what's going on right now, or I guess you could probably watch or listen to this any month, almost any year in modern times, and you're going to have the exact same situation. And Brutus, in his 8th Anti-Federalist paper, warned of this: "I can scarcely contemplate a greater calamity that could befall this country than to be loaded with a debt exceeding their ability ever to discharge." So having so much debt run up by government that they can't pay it back to the great anti-federalist writer Brutus was the greatest calamity. Well, I can scarcely contemplate. Maybe he had another one that I'm not aware of, but of all the papers that I've covered and read of his work, that seems to be the top one. George Mason warned that when once a standing army is established in any country, the people lose their liberty. So debts and taking of property, subduing freeness of speech, establishing large standing armies, these are some of the things that they use to take away our liberty. And James Madison, in his Political Observations, April 20th, 1795, said, "Of all the enemies to public liberty, of all of them," there are many, of course, and we're covering just a handful of them here to kick it off, "of all of them, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded, because it comprises and develops the germ of every other." Madison continued. He said, "War is the parent of armies, and from armies you get debts and taxes." So you get a combination of all these different things that these other founders and old revolutionaries were talking about through the warfare state. So war is the parent of armies. From armies you get debts and taxes, and to James Madison, the father of the Constitution, armies and debts and taxes are the known instruments for putting the many under the domination of the few. And then if you combine that situation with a tax on your right of self-defense, your right to keep and bear arms, St. George Tucker put it this way: "Wherever standing armies are kept up, and the right of the people to keep and bear arms is, under any color or pretext whatsoever, prohibited, liberty, if not already annihilated, is on the brink of destruction." And we're going to get into what makes a free people in just a moment. Thomas Jefferson, and I think all of these are the result of centralization of power. Maybe that's how Jefferson was looking at it in this 1816 letter to Joseph C. Cabell. He said, "What has destroyed liberty and the rights of man in every government which has ever existed under the sun?" Man, Jefferson had a flair, right? "The generalizing and concentrating all cares and powers into one body." So the more centralized the power is, the more that they can run up debt, the more they can take property, the more they can attack freedom of speech, the more they can establish standing armies, the more they can have armies and debts and taxes. All these known instruments for putting the many under the domination of the few come from centralizing power. And I think that's what Thomas Jefferson is getting at here. And I did mention that I covered a lot of these, or some of these at least, in an episode earlier this month, top five threats to liberty. I think I mentioned it in that episode, like my top five, going and looking at the founders and old revolutionaries, they could probably change almost every day, and every single one are going to be considered a great threat to liberty. But these are big ways that they attack liberty. And I will link to that episode, Top 5 Threats to Liberty, in the show notes in case you haven't checked it out yet. It's pretty decent, I think. I haven't gone back and listened to it. So anyways, those are the ways they attack. Now, kind of a transition, a segue. One of the ways, of course, that this continues to grow is through precedent. Every attack on liberty sets the stage for another. But now here's some of the good stuff as well. How does liberty advance? And that's so important for us today. People are basically either giving up hope, or they're focusing on the wrong way to advance liberty, and things keep getting worse. Here's Dickinson, John Dickinson, the penman of the American Revolution, who wrote The Letters from a Farmer in Pennsylvania in 1767, the most widely read documents on American liberty until publication of Thomas Paine's Common Sense in 1776. Here in letter number 6, "All artful rulers," which I think is kind of redundant. Absolutely, these days, absolutely redundant. "All artful rulers who strive to extend their power beyond its just limits, endeavor to give their attempts as much semblance of legality as possible. You never hear people in power saying, you know, we need to do blank, and it's really not authorized, but it's so important that we need to do it anyway. No, what they do is they take their own political goal, and then they find a way to shoehorn it within the bounds of the Constitution. And unfortunately, because people are focused on a party-first mentality or an end-result mentality, and they are never taught, they don't learn through the government-run schools, and they're not interested in learning on their own what the original legal meaning of the Constitution is. They just want to be told what it is by the court system or by politicians or whoever happens to favor their political goals. They don't care. And so all you have to do is hear from somebody that you like, oh yeah, this is legal, and then it is. And that's the way most people treat things, and it flips back and forth. I'm setting up the stage for another episode. It flips back and forth. What's legal depends on who does it sometimes. Anyway, so Dickinson is warning that people with power will always try to make it look like the stuff that they're not supposed to do is legal. And as long as the people fall for it, things are going to get worse because it sets a precedent. He said those who succeed them may venture to go a little further, for each new encroachment will be strengthened by a former. That which is now supported by examples growing old will become an example itself and thus support fresh usurpation. So how do the people deal with this? Well, I'm kind of giving away the answer to the question. But Dickinson said a free people. So if you are going to be a free people, therefore, can never be too quick in observing nor too firm in opposing the beginnings of alteration, either in form or reality, respecting institutions formed for their security. So if you have a set of rules for government, if you're going to be a free people, you can't be too quick in pointing out and noticing when they're going beyond those limits, because you have to recognize that the government people will always, all artful rulers will always try to make it look like the stuff that they want to do is legal. So if you're going to be free, you have to be very quick in observing that this is what's happening, and you can never be too firm in opposing it. And I think that says quite a bit in and of itself. But then Dickinson, in letter number 7, followed this up, and he asked that essential question, which is the title of this episode: who are a free people? And he did it in all caps. If you're looking at the video up here, all caps quite a bit from time to time from John Dickinson. So he said, for who are a free people? Not those over whom government is reasonable and equitably exercised, but those who live under a government so constitutionally checked and controlled that proper provision is made against it being otherwise exercised. Sorry if I stumbled over that. Of course, you can read it and get it without the verbal typos that I make from time to time, because I will link to this letter and all the other stuff in the show notes, tenthamendmentcenter.com/path-to-liberty. So Dickinson is asking this essential question: who are our free people? If you happen to live under a government that has a ton of power that just happens to be filled with people who love liberty, like a libertarian dictator forcing freedom on everybody, then you're not free. You just happen to be lucky that you're living in that state. A free people to John Dickinson, and to basically all the founders and old revolutionaries, maybe you have a couple of outliers in there, but the general view, and of course, if Dickinson wrote the most popular, widely read documents in the American Revolution before the fighting really broke out, well, in the early days of the American Revolution, which was a revolution in thought, this was the general harmonizing sentiment of the day. And when Thomas Jefferson talked about writing the Declaration of Independence, he said he wasn't coming up with new ideas. He was coming up with a way to express the harmonizing sentiments of the day. This was the view of the people in general, that people are free when they live in a scenario that as soon as government tries to go outside of its bounds, it gets a quick slap back right into place. It's so checked and controlled. The people are so firm in opposing any actions that attack their liberty that it can't get away with it. And that's how St. George Tucker put it some decades later in his very important work, View of the Constitution of the United States in 1803, which, of course, they almost totally ignore today when they're teaching law students. You don't really learn about Tucker, but this was the most important legal analysis of the Constitution in the early days of the Republic, again, 1803. And here's how Tucker put it. When responsibility ceases, slavery begins. Freedom, liberty, is about responsibility. Not waiting for people to do the right thing. That's a population on its knees begging for permission. So as long as the people aren't taking responsibility for their own constitution and their own liberty, they're not in a state of freedom. He said it is the due restraint and not the moderation of rulers that constitutes a state of liberty. As the power to oppress, though never exercised, does a state of slavery. So to St. George Tucker, he's actually just reiterating what Dickinson said so many decades earlier. I went to government-run school, so my math is terrible. I don't know what 1803 minus 1767 is. Almost four decades earlier, 36 years earlier. I guess I got that. They both are saying that just because the government happens to be doing the right thing and respecting liberty, that's obviously a good thing. We want, if people are going to be in power, we don't want them to attack liberty. But that is not what they considered a state of freedom. That was still a state of slavery because you're just under the whims of people in power. And when politicians change or people in power change and they decide to use that power in different ways, you're not going to be living in a state of freedom. You're not going to be in a situation where you have due restraint, or you're not just going to have the moderation of rulers. You need them to be restrained from their actions. Back to Dickinson in 1767 in his 11th letter. He said, a perpetual jealousy respecting liberty is absolutely requisite in all free states. Now, that doesn't mean, not like a relationship kind of a jealousy, but really there's other definitions for the term. And in this context, we're really talking about suspicion, distrust, but also being protective, mindful, vigilant of liberty. And the founding generation, the founders, the old revolutionaries, used the term jealousy, being jealous of rulers, being jealous of power, being jealous of encroachment. You see this in the ratification debates, when they were talking about being jealous of federal power encroaching on the powers reserved to the states. And that's how Dickinson put it. So if you're going to be free, you have to have a perpetual, never-ending jealousy, distrust of power. Respect liberty. That's absolutely requisite. Patrick Henry said almost the same thing in the Virginia Ratifying Convention in 1788. Guard with jealous attention the public liberty. Suspect everyone who approaches that jewel. And Dickinson here, we could call him possibly the father of the Articles of Confederation. He was one of the first. Benjamin Franklin had the first formal proposal. Then Dickinson was probably the lead drafter of what became the Articles of Confederation. But when it came time to ratify the Constitution, he was in favor of it. And he was pointing out that, okay, yeah, you can point out things that are good or bad about this, but we have to recognize that a good constitution, the best ever out there, only promotes a good administration. It cannot guarantee it. And I'm paraphrasing that. And he said, you know, whatever we end up having around here, whatever we might pass as a constitution for these United States, it must be granted, he wrote, that a bad administration may take place. He said, what is then to be done? What is then to be done? Because when you have a free people that love and support liberty, you have to recognize that eventually people with power are going to try to violate the limits of their power. They will try to attack your liberty. So what is then to be done? To Dickinson, he said, the answer is to be put before the supreme sovereignty of the people. Under the American system, sovereignty, final authority, is supposed to be in the hands of the people of the several states. This was one of the primary principles of the American Revolution. They fought a long, bloody war to get away from arbitrary government where it was just the decision about how much power was in the hands of the people who had power. Arbitrary government was specifically listed as one of the grievances in the Declaration of Independence. So the supreme final authority of the people is how you answer the question of what must be done when a bad administration of government takes place. He said, It is their duty, the people's duty. It is their duty to watch, and their right to take care that the Constitution be preserved, or in the Roman phrase, on perilous occasions, to provide that the Republic receive no damage. And I know for those of you who listen to me, watch this show regularly, you've heard me say it over and over and over again, this quote among many others, but ultimately, the supreme sovereignty of the people, their duty to watch and their right to take care, that means we the people have to protect and preserve our own Constitution and our own liberty, whether the government wants to or not. Here's how Samuel Adams put it, writing as Candidus in the Boston Gazette, October 14, 1771. His entire essay is awesome. I will link to it over in the show notes, a whole, basically an ebook from Project Gutenberg of the writings of Samuel Adams. But October 14, 1771. The truth is, all might be free if they valued freedom and defended it as they ought. So again, ultimately, it's up to the people to love freedom. It's up to the people to support their own constitution. And it's up to the people to defend their liberty, their freedom, whether the government wants them to or not. Now, we know, living under the largest government in the history of the world, this is not going to come fast. There is no silver bullet, and it's not going to be easy. But as Thomas Paine put it in The American Crisis number 4, this was in September of 1777. The first one was just published this week in history, December Christmas time of 1776. These are the times that try men's souls. We know that famous phrase from Thomas Paine, but he had follow-up essays. And in the fourth, he put it this way: those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigues of supporting it. And this is the kind of essential foundational principle we work hard every single day to get out to more and more people, and absolutely nothing helps us get that job done more than the financial faith and support of our members. I want to take a quick moment to give a huge thank you and a quick shout out to just a handful of people who have joined us as members recently. You can join them for as little as $2 a month over at 10thamendmentcenter.com/members. It's all spelled out. 10thamendmentcenter.com/members. There's Kristen in New York, Jeffrey in Pennsylvania, Lee in New Jersey, Bryce in Virginia, Charles in Florida, and Allison in Arizona. There are a number of others. I apologize for not mentioning everybody, but I'm so grateful for you putting your financial faith behind our work. Let me take a look over in the live chat and see if there's any comments or questions I can get back to. I get so many great ideas. So many great ideas for future episodes based on your comments and questions. Also by email, team@10thamendmentcenter.com. Leslie G says, I'm a little late, was teaching my elementary kiddos about the Declaration of Independence and the Revolutionary War. Let's see, that's some awesome parenting right there. I definitely didn't get that as a kid. My parents certainly tried, but I think there's been so much trust in government by so many generations. Just hand them off to the government to decide that this is going to be good. And then, of course, we should know, as I grew up, I'll give my example, you know, I started out in going to these government schools, and I was taught that the solution to all problems came from government. What a surprise, right? Clay Kent says, awesome as usual. Dixie Strong, Merry Christmas to all you liberty lovers. Merry Christmas to you as well. Richard Kramer says, you and I must talk when you have time. I would love to. The issue is the time there, Richard. I really appreciate that. Dave Simmons points out our Rumble channel, which is 10th Amendment Center. Hopefully, it actually is working. And Richard Kramer says, we must start locally. Absolutely. I mean, we're talking about advancing individual liberty. If our end goal is liberty, which is freedom for the individual, the closer that the decision-making is made to the individual, the better. I wish I actually had the link handy. I mean, I've got it in my notes. Maybe I can pull it up. The Thomas Jefferson letter to Joseph C. Cabell, where he's basically talking, he said, you know, what has destroyed liberty in every government under the sun? Let's see if I can pull that quote up again here. What has destroyed liberty and the rights of man in every government which has existed under the sun? The generalizing and concentrating all cares and powers into one body. But that's not the only point that he made. He also made it's not an ANCAP perspective, for those of you who are familiar with the term, But he says, you know, the proper way to do things is to divide it up. You know, let the general government deal with the general concerns and the local governments deal with the local concerns. And he kept breaking it down further and further until the individual, let each individual mind their own issues that they're able to take care of on their own with no interference. He said that's going to be the best situation possible. So the more things that the individual can deal without any government involvement at all, the better. And that's pretty advanced, I think, thinking in the time of 1816 as well. Anyways, I appreciate that comment, Richard. Thank you so much. Let me see if there's any other comments or questions. There's a lot. Dixie Strong said Liberty wouldn't have been high on the founders' list if they had college and pro football. I'm going to mention another Jefferson quote. He wrote to his nephew, I believe, at one point. He said, as to the species of exercise, I recommend the gun. He recommend to go for a walk, to think, and to carry your firearm and practice with it. He said, games of the, you know, using a ball, you know, that doesn't really advance the mind or strengthen the body in the way that you need to stand for liberty. Clay Kent says libertarian dictatorship, that's an oxymoron. Well, yes, I agree with that. But I think a lot of people want a centralized power to force freedom on people. And to me, it's a little internal joke that I have with myself. M. Gabriel says guard with jealous attention. I like the term using jealous attention, firm opposition, and of course, resist, as Mercyotis Warren said, resist the first approaches of tyranny. So in short, it's, again, it's up to the people to protect and defend their constitution, whether the government wants them to or not. And it's going to take some work. It's going to take some difficulty. As Jefferson said, we're not going to get from despotism to liberty in a feather bed. As Paine said, you know, those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigues of supporting it. And part of doing that is to resist the first approaches of tyranny. Resist first. Everything else comes later. Well, I hope you guys found this interesting. I hope it was educational. Don't forget those links, 10thAmendmentCenter.com/path to liberty. That's where you follow the show, 10thAmendmentCenter.com/members. That's where you put your financial faith behind our work for as little as $2 a month. And other ways you can help us spread the word is leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, smashing the like, leaving comments, sharing links. All that stuff can trigger the algorithms of these mainstream platforms and tell them to show us to more people. It helps out a ton. I really appreciate you being here. I hope you enjoyed the episode. I hope you learned something. I hope you have an awesome Merry Christmas, and I'll see you sometime next week here on the Path to Liberty.